And I know you can feel it as well. Doug Hagman, the Hagman Report. Hagman, two N's, PI.com. Today is Tuesday. Tuesday. What happened to Monday? More on that later. It's Tuesday, April 1, 2025. Hey. 25% through 2025. Can you believe how time has flown? I have just a jam-packed show, a lot of information. A lot of information that I'm going to be sharing that I think people will be surprised to hear. And I'm only mentioning this because, well, there's two reasons why I'm mentioning this. Alex Jones touched upon it today. Actually, his guest. That's one of the things I'm going to get into, which is part of the fact that they are still coming after President Trump, members of his family, and targets, other specific targets. I'm telling you right now, if you ever want to see a flashpoint to a civil war that'll evolve into a revolution, that's one way to do it. And I suggest, and I pray not. Civil war into the revolution, high-profile target lists. The people behind this, also, what they're mobilizing for and who is mobilizing. This is getting in pretty deep. We're really naming names, identifying people. And then we're going to touch on the New York Times screed, the 10,000-word article about Ukraine. And then we're going to keep talking, though, about the fact that there are assassins. You heard me right, assassins out there. There are targets you wouldn't expect. You would not expect some of these targets. But I'll talk more on that in a minute. Before I get to the show, I want to thank you again, every one of you who have supported us, are supporting us. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. David M., look, I'm not going to get as much as I'd like to give you. Thanks for your encouragement and for everything you do. We really appreciate you from the bottom of my heart. Terrific, terrific guy. Just a terrific guy. But I want to thank our sponsors, too, including thehealthyfat.com/Hagman. Two N's on Hagman. You know, don't eat breakfast, for example, until you learn about caloric bypass. So you got tonight to learn about it before you eat breakfast tomorrow morning. Your breakfast is really setting you up for the entire day to either gain or lose weight, right? And about 4 hours after you eat dinner, your body switches from the nutrients we get from the food to the stored glycogen we have in our bodies. And once glycogen stores are depleted, typically after 8 to 12 hours, the body shifts to burning fat for energy. Well, fatty acids are released from the fat stores. I can explain how this works. You know, they're converted into ketone bodies through a process called ketogenesis. Then when you eat breakfast in the morning, the body starts to cycle again. Well, this is where the caloric bypass comes into play. And it's really just a tremendous tactic. And Dr. Gundry, a heart surgeon in California, learned that if you break your nightly fast with something called MCTs or medium chain triglycerides, you can actually keep burning fat throughout the day and use it for energy. But there are specific types of foods that contain these MCTs. So using this breakfast breakthrough, he was able to lose about 70 pounds just through diet. And he did it while he was in his 60s. So you can find all about this. Go to thehealthyfat.com/Hagman. That's thehealthyfat.com/Hagman. Click the link in the description box below. And it's important to remember that everybody's body processes fat differently. And it all depends on your unique metabolic type, which is why the video he released for you, the viewers of this, of the Hagmann Report, he talks all about it. So it's quite fascinating. And it might change the way you think about your health. Go to thehealthyfat.com/Hagmann or click on the link in the description box below. Okay. How many people, you know what? I'm going to turn right at this early moment in the show. Hang on 1 second here. I'm going to turn to the people who are in the chat first. Just by a Y or N, yes or no, whatever. How many people saw today's show with Alex Jones? Not Owen Schroyer or anyone else. I mean, Jones, the time that he was on. I need to know this because, okay, so you, Hope, Faith, Love saw it. No, Real Joy. I got a feeling we're going to have like a 50-50, 60-40 split. It's going to be pretty close. Okay, well, you know what? There are a lot of no's here. Punch Bowl. Yay or nay? Yes or no? Y or N? Not sot. Okay. All right. It appears the no's outnumber the yeses. Motion not passed. Okay. So this, I was surprised. When I saw this, because frankly, I didn't think he or his guests was going to be talking about this. All right. You know, I want to set this up a little bit. You know, there was a JFK file release, obviously, releasing of the JFK files. And people are still going through them, obviously. There are a heck of a lot of files to go through. I will tell you that. And people are looking for, and I have to say this, people are looking for a smoking gun. That's not something we should be looking for in these files, because we're not going to find a smoking gun. I'm going to tell you that right now. And even if there one, if even if a smoking gun existed in those files, they never turn it over. They never see the light of day. Now, this does impact on today. Okay, so please, just bear with me. The file release, what's in the files, and what happened on July 13th of this year, or last year in Butler, President Trump, and times before and since, I'm telling you, this has relevance to those times. But again, it's not a smoking gun that everyone's looking for. That smoking gun. No. What you're looking for in this is a course of conduct, a course of institutional conduct. Some call it a fact pattern or a pattern of facts. We'll just use fact pattern as a shorter way of saying course of institutional conduct or course of conduct of individual conduct. Okay. So you look, and we do this in investigations a lot. Eric the Tech was here along with some members of the Shatter Ops team. They've been working. They're working as I speak right now. And they were involved in the investigation in Butler. Okay. We had a great conversation today. Eric the Tech, man. Wow. But let me tell you what's really going on here with respect to the release of the records, what I believe that's going to be going on. We're what? 13? How many days? 12 days out from it. After 62 years, this was a pretty significant disclosure that we got, talking about or writing about what happened in 1963. And when you combine these records with the previous releases, there were four. And this is one of the things you cannot do. One of the sideshows that we've seen is that congressional task force hearing. What the hell that aired? I think it was yesterday, today. Within the last 24 hours. Anna Paulina Luna. That's a sideshow. Forget about that. You've got, Oliver Stone. Come on. Come on, man. No, it's just not. No. You look at the documentation. There were two documents specifically that came out that are extremely important and set the stage for what is to be learned by the documents, what we have learned, and what is applicable to today. Now, it's not a simple analysis. It's complicated. It's a complicated account of, and I'm referring to my notes here as well. So if I look down, forgive me. It's a complicated account of covert operations that have been wrapped up in official secrecy, in deceptive, very deceptive statements at the time, and even the assassination board, review board, in what was it, 75. And we, with all the releases, but there is deceptive, really deceptive statements all throughout the documents. But as we look at these documents, comparing those to the thousands of others, we can see a specific fact pattern emerge. The one document, there's one document out of two that really sets the stage for what happened then and even for what is going on right now. That was a memo that Arthur Schlesinger wrote to President Kennedy. Okay, now I didn't grab this from the archive, my bad. When I went back to find it, I couldn't find it. But he wrote a memo. Arthur Schlesinger wrote a memo to President Kennedy. And the entirety of this page of this document had been secret since forever. Everything was redacted. But this memo, Kennedy was furious. To set this up, Kennedy was absolutely PO'd after the Bay of Pigs incident. Now, I'm painting with some pretty broad strokes here as opposed to getting into the really granular details because that would take pretty much all night. So, after the Bay of Pigs, President Kennedy felt that the CIA was trying to impose their foreign policy on him personally, but also on the presidency. Now, again, think about this in the context of today. And remember, fact patterns. You need to be looking for fact patterns or patterns of individual or institutional conduct, because they haven't changed. So Kennedy was kind of upset with himself about being bamboozled by the CIA in the Bay of Pigs incident. This is just one of many aspects to the assassination, but a very important one, not in the sense of the assassination, but in the sense of setting the stage for Kennedy's assassination and learning about the fact pattern, the course of conduct of the deep state, so-called deep state. In this case, the intelligence community, specifically the CIA. Remember, there's a quote somewhere where he wanted to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter to the winds. I think he said that to a New York Times reporter. But Schlesinger said, if that's what you really want to do, here's what we need to do, or here's what you should do, or could do to reorganize or to revamp the CIA. Again, this is 63. What's happening right now? To a large extent, the intelligence community in the West, and specifically in the U.S., is being shuffled around. But he wrote like a 15-page, I think the document's 15 pages. And Schlesinger to Kennedy. And he was a pretty liberal advisor to Kennedy. And Schlesinger wrote, here's how you can do it. And here's why you would do it. And the document tells of why, or the reason why, or the reason of, the reason why of what Kennedy wanted to do. Okay, so Kennedy didn't do it right away, or didn't do it right, I should say. It was a huge task, even at that time. But he talked about reorganizing the CIA, and he had other priorities and such, but he decided not to do it. But again, this is insight into his thinking. But more importantly, it's insight into the CIA's operational conduct, institutional conduct, and fact pattern analysis when you look at that time and today. Okay? Very important. Eric the Tech, you understand? Am I making sense? You be the judge here. Hello, Eric the Tech. Calling Eric the Tech. I can just see him. He's back there eating a cookie. Feet up, propped up on the desk. All right. I'll give you a pass. I'll ask the chat. You getting this? Chat? Members of the chat? Since Eric's not talking. You're making sense. Okay. That's all I need. He's on break. Eric. Well, where in the hell were you?
I had to check on something.
Okay. No worries. That's code for had to go potty. No, I'm kidding. That's okay, buddy. That's all right. All right. I do want to get through this, and I apologize if this is taking extraordinarily long, but this is so important because what I'm going to tell you next involves all of us. So what Kennedy learned at that time in 1963, 61, 62, and early 63, is that the U.S. State Department, the political officers around the world, almost 50% at that time were CIA officers. They were under the cover of being the CIA officer or officers. Yeah. And the president didn't know this. He knew, Kennedy knew some, but not to that extent. Now, think of that number today, or perhaps even more relevant, think of that number with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State under Obama. Okay? Because, again, this all comes into play today. That number was decidedly higher under Clinton, under Obama, than Kennedy. Okay? Now, I don't know how many people remember, well, know about this or studied history. So, well, let me just be sure here. The CIA was encroaching on the president's foreign policy. They were undermining Kennedy's foreign policy. They were leaking like a sieve. They were doing all sorts of nasty things. Okay. And this is a big part of the deep state. Now, the fact pattern that emerged from these documents is what the deep state was trying to protect. The redactions. This 15-page memo was entirely blacked out until this release. And if I can find the memo, or if somebody in the chat knows where that is, knows what I'm talking about, the Schlesinger memo to Kennedy, just drop it in the chat. A benefit of being part of the Rumble chat. So, Schlesinger in this memo related a pretty telling incident in 1961. And I don't know how many people studied this, remember this, know about this, but there was an attempted coup against Charles de Gaulle, the president of France. Remember that? He was trying to pull out of Algeria at the time. Algeria was France's Vietnam, pretty much, at the if you think about the time period. It was this woefully stupid foreign engagement that should never have been. So there was an attempted coup, attempted assassination of Charles de Gaulle, because he wanted to pull out of Algeria. His advisors and the soldiers and all of that, right? That kind of like, again, kind of like Vietnam. The war powers in France, as well as the U.S., hey, they weren't liking that too much. Think again now with Kennedy Bay of Pigs, and then of course with Vietnam just kind of percolating. Okay. Think of now, compare the color revolutions that are taking place in places like France. Marie Le Pen. What happened to her? Was it yesterday or today? What happened to her? She was found guilty of a trumped up charge of embezzlement, sentenced to what, 4 years in prison, and said you can't, and the court said you can't run for president, Marie Le Pen. But what did they already do to people like Bolsonaro and others? And what are they trying to do to the surviving nationalists of other countries, but more importantly, in America? And we can also use this template for Canada, but specifically, this is America. We're talking about America here. So the CIA station in Paris knew about this, and de Gaulle knew that the CIA station or the State Department in Paris knew about this. So we knew about it. De Gaulle knew. We knew about it before de Gaulle knew about the attempted assassination. You follow me? You know how he knew? Two reasons. Lights were on in the office building the entire night before and during. And food service. Donnie, watch the deliveries. Okay. So, because the CIA station in Paris was on top of the U.S. embassy, basically. Okay, and all the lights were on all night, on the night of the coup, the attempted coup. And de Gaulle always thought that the CIA was behind the coup. Even a year later, when a group of assassins from the same right-wing faction was trying to ambush de Gaulle, when he was on his way to his country house. So there's lessons to be learned here. I don't want to get down too far down into the weeds here. But when you look at these documents, now think about Kennedy. Think about De Gaulle's, his driver going to the country house, and all of a sudden the sedan, you know, gets shot at that De Gaulle's in, and the driver did some really great driving. I got to tell you, to get away from the shots, if you know the history, the CIA or the what happened with Kennedy, not so much. But then, you know, I'm not ascribing a blame here. But this is the story of the assassination of JFK. But so begins the mistrust between the CIA and Kennedy, and the CIA that would endure the rest of his presidency right up to the end. You have to understand, this is like the CIA operations. Again, a fact pattern emerging, whether it be at the station in France or whether it be in other countries, the same book template manual was used in DC and throughout the United States. Now, I know this is painful. I'm going slow, but you have to really appreciate this. Think of this in terms of Butler. Think of this in terms of what happened in Florida 64 days later. I will say this. We have not stopped working on the Butler case. I do expect... let me ask Eric the Tech. Hang on just a second. Eric the Tech, did you hear anything yet? You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to say it on the air.
I did. I saw it. Saw some stuff.
Hold that thought. Okay, so we're still working on the Butler case. Are they going to see it? If the client says it's okay,
I'd assume eventually, yeah.
Okay, is it going to change the way people think about Butler?
It's another avenue, one that's been on my mind.
Okay. I don't want to frustrate or tease, sound like a tease to the audience, because that's not it. It's just that if
we've got to get it all first.
Right. Thank you. Yes. There's information that's still out there that we have to drag, claw in. Because we're not authorized with subpoena power just yet, or attached to anyone with subpoena power. But I can't, I mean, if I said the word, the name, it'd be all over. I mean, evidence would be destroyed. And so I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to tell you the moment, the minute, the second we can tell you. It's what you said. We're going to, it's what you said earlier, right? In the office.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, just I want to make sure. Again, I'm not trying to frustrate you or tease you. Real work is being done with real people, with real investigators, with talking to people that were there, that know stuff, that saw stuff, that got threatened by the FBI, that got threatened by the state police, that got threatened by the local police, that got threatened by everybody. There's a reason for that. Kind of like here. The mistrust between the CIA and Kennedy. The CIA would endure, for the rest of his term, until it was cut short on November 22nd, 1963. Kennedy suspected that the CIA might, in fact, based on the information surrounding the memo, that 15-page memo, might be involved in a coup against him. This is what I'm talking about, a fact pattern. The modus operandi of the CIA back then versus today, when you factor in the improvements in electronics and stuff like that, really hasn't changed that much. And think about this. How many times have we heard, oh, yes, that guy's been on the radar? Every flipping time you have the FBI or sometimes the CIA once in a while. Oh, yeah, he's been on our radar. Yeah. Well, one of the important characters in the CIA named in these, there's actually two sets of papers, one the 15-page memo, and then there was another 9-document set, okay, about James Angleton. Does that name sound familiar? James Angleton, CIA? So you look at these documents, you read them. No one knows, and the mainstream media organizations just don't want to talk about what I'm talking about. And that's the fact that we have Lee Harvey Oswald. He was not a lone nut. He was known. He was a known entity to the CIA, a small group within the CIA, counterintelligence. Remember the CIA counterintelligence. Remember that, because I'm going to show you something here in a minute. You don't like me pointing? So stop pointing. Shh, stop your hand. Okay. So, what these documents, the 9-page, why is my hand red? That's just weird. So the 9-page document, or the 15-page document, and then I think there's a 9-page, I didn't store the documents, which I should have. 9 or more pages that admit that a small group within the CIA, including James Angleton, knew, followed Lee Harvey Oswald for 4 flipping years before JFK was shot. 4 years. In fact, the CIA followed him, had him under surveillance, including the time when he was shot in Dallas by Jack Rubenstein. Again, hold that thought, fact pattern. Those that release gave us all of the information that the CIA had on Oswald. I think there were in total 32 separate files, about nearly 200 pages. This is from my scribbles here. And that there was no point during those 4 years where the top people in the CIA did not have Lee Harvey Oswald's home address, where he was on the planet, what he was doing, the fact that he was in Moscow, the fact that he was at a shooting range in Moscow and couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. It's in there. The fact that he went to Dallas. The CIA knew all about this. Now, again, do you believe Oswald shot Kennedy? If you do, you can kind of just disregard what I'm about to say. If you think it was a larger conspiracy, think Butler and think Patsy. Not Patsy Cline. So the CIA has never explained why or what with respect to Oswald. Where he was mentioned, like the Warren Commission in the documents that were, but they never explained, they really never addressed Oswald aside from the lone gunman. And even members of the Warren Commission, even congressional individuals at that time, never really brought up this issue. And the media was complicit. Complicit. I'm not saying, actually, I'll say facilitated to some extent. You had three major stations. You know, when you had to turn the dial and that dial, that squishy dial on top, you know, with the rabbit ears, UHF, VHF. You had three stations. ABC, CBS, NBC. And believe me, Walter Cronkite, my goodness, he knew everything. He was the granddad of them all, Walter Cronkite. Everyone believed Cronkite, and that's the way it is. Well, that wasn't the way it was. And then the special take is when he removed his glasses after announcing Oswald's death. I should learn how to do that better. You get where I'm going? The New York Times, reporters from the New York Times, there's this weird cognitive dissonance with people believing the mainstream legacy media versus the facts, especially the facts from the JFK files. Again, maybe they're thinking improperly, looking for this smoking gun. Yes, so-and-so was the shooter. You're not going to ever find that. And most assuredly, you're not going to find that in the, I don't know how many people know this, the task force on the assassination of President Trump released a final report of 46 witnesses. And the witnesses, by the way, 46, for crying out loud, we did that in 4 days. But the witnesses were all law enforcement, federal, state, local. But that was released on December 24th of last year. Did you even know about that? Probably not. Why? Because forget about it. Forget about it. All right. So we know that there was a conspiracy. We know by the testimony in AARB in the 70s, the review board. They said right out that was their conclusion. This was a conspiracy. There was a conspiracy to kill Kennedy. But how often is that talked about? It's always a Warren Commission. Kennedy. It could not have been Kennedy. Glenn Beck did a couple of segments on this. There's one where he actually tried to get the shots off, and he did. I mean, I don't know how much expense he went to recreate the. Oh, my goodness. But it doesn't take that. It doesn't take that. That was only part of the story. It could have been anyone holding that gun. And then you have Roger Stone, too. Getting away from the documents for a second, Roger Stone writing the book, The Man Who Killed President Kennedy, LBJ, in reference to LBJ, Malcolm Wallace. And then you have, in addition to all of that, then you have that audio recording. Did you hear that audio recording? Did we play that audio recording? Billy Saul Estes and Cliff Carter? Okay. Folks, did you probably heard that. It doesn't matter. Cliff Carter and Billy Saul Estes were talking, and essentially the gist of that recording was LBJ ordered the hit on Kennedy, or was one of the people who ordered the hit on Kennedy. And Billy Saul Estes recorded the conversation with Cliff Carter. There was a conversation, and they were very verbose about it over an open telephone line. And before he died, Billy Saul Estes gave the recording to his grandson. And now this is important, okay? Because people, I saw people saying, "Well, I can't be real because the mini cassette or the micro cassettes weren't invented until 1969, and here it is on." Because Glenn Beck wanted to see the real tapes, and anyway. If you look, the micro cassette was invented, or I could have that backwards, back in 64. And around the time of that, in the months after the assassination. So it could very well be, or, and this is a lesser possibility, it could have been recorded on a reel-to-reel and then transferred later to that particular tape. But at any rate, it was an analog tape, and you could tell based on how, I mean, you can rely on the authenticity based on the testimony from the grandson of Billy Saul Estes. So here's what I'm saying to you. You've got all of this information of a conspiracy, yet the staunch denials by the media and by members of the government, including Congress, even today, faced with all of this information, and most assuredly by the intelligence community. So what do you think you're going to get from the two assassination attempts that we know about that were made public against Donald Trump? You're not going to get squat. Nothing. Well, maybe not nothing. Because I'll tell you why. We ain't holding nothing back once. And here's the only caveat I'm going to mention. We have a client who cares dearly about the life of President Trump. You believe me. And if our client decided that's not, you know what? That would be putting his life in more danger. Please don't. Then we respect that. I'm just saying. But I don't think that'll be the case. Because we have, but again, people say, why don't you release it now? Why don't you release it now? No, we can't. We can't. It's a road, it's an avenue that has long been suspected, and now we're going after the evidence to create the proof to hand to the particular, to the client, who I guarantee you it'll be in the Department of Justice before the handoff even takes place. Okay. So, again, think about the context with President Trump, Ukraine, Iran to some extent, but Ukraine especially, versus JFK with Vietnam. You do know, folks, that we have boots, U.S. soldiers, boots on the ground in Ukraine, right? You do know that. You do know that we have so-called advisors, you know, the air quotes, on the ground in Ukraine. So we are directly fighting. There's a direct fight against Russia. Now, here's something that, folks, please pay close attention to this and kind of read between the lines. Well, hang on. Let me finish with the papers. Gosh, I wrote a lot of notes. The heck was I thinking? Okay. Okay, Sam, hang on a second. Let me find where I stopped in my notes. See, Eric the Tech, this is why I like these kind of notes as opposed to electronic notes, but okay.
You did it.
I know.
Want a cookie?
I do. I want two, actually. Okay, so, by the way, I made some incredible chicken wings last night, or yesterday. It was early yesterday. I don't know. No, Sunday. I'm sorry. What am I thinking of? Sunday.
You make good chicken wings.
I'm telling you, these were the best. I had a dry rub, but then charred lightly charred with a barbecue sauce. Okay, I'll get back to what I'm talking about. Oh, and
torch each one by hand.
Almost. And I had on Sunday, I also gave, and for my wife, I created this bruschetta brie cheese prosciutto de Parma appetizer. Oh, fabulous. I can only afford to get like six of the pieces of prosciutto because that's like, you know, anyway. All right, getting back to this. And the cheese, my goodness, it was wow. But I made up with it for the inexpensive nature of the chicken wings. But okay, so here, James Jesus Angleton plays a big part in these papers. When you look at these papers, remember Kennedy wanted to end the hostilities between the U.S. Really wanted to end the Cold War. He was inspired to end the Cold War, and he wanted to take the U.S. in a new direction of an anti-war stance. Again, amazing parallels to today. Ukraine, Gaza, same thing. Americans generally are against war in general, except the psychos. All right, so we don't want to spend our treasure and our blood on foreign soil. But the abundance of war preps, war signals, and all of that baked into the time as reflected by the documents shows a different story, if you know what I mean. And then Angleton had this relationship, and I know people are going to clap and say, it's about time you mentioned this, but it's, again, this is... Just stop. Stop with the anti-Jewish stuff. Anti-Zionist, I get that. Anti-Jewish or Israeli government, members therein, I get that. But Angleton had this relationship with Israeli intelligence. And he was also getting information about what was going on in Pakistan and throughout the Middle East and stuff. And Kennedy did not want, I should say this, didn't want Israel to have or develop on their own nuclear weapons. I'm just saying. But so this is when the FBI, and this is important, the CIA began the program, the COINTEL program. Now, COINTEL is specifically believed, or some people believe this to be an FBI program, and they associate with Gruber, or Jerry Gruber. But COINTELPRO was a joint CIA and FBI program. Angleton was a counterintelligence chief and had a lot of influence on counterintelligence programs of the FBI, although he was CIA, had no charter in the U.S., but influenced the FBI. So that's reflected in the documents as well. Again, this is when COINTELPRO was really, I don't want to say invented, but really got its, you know, got its legs. Okay. Angleton had a lot of influence on a counterintelligence program of the FBI. That's a fact, as painted in these documents. Here's the thing, that doesn't take you into the history of the assassination, but what it does do is guide you through the history of the repression of truth, of censorship back in the 60s, and how facts were twisted by the FBI, by the CIA, through into the news media, through this COINTEL program that still exists today. Stuff about the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. That's another story that was in the documents that's coming out. And the CIA spies in New Orleans with not just Angleton, but with Lee Harvey Oswald. Angleton gave testimony to the Church Committee in June of 75. And that's what I was, I'm sorry, I messed that up. The Church Committee was 75. The AARB was late, a couple of years after that. He'd just been fired from the CIA. And he was going to, at that point, justify himself to say, look, I was really doing my job. I was doing a good job. I was doing an extraordinary job. And I developed this extraordinary, we developed the CIA and under my tutelage in this particular aspect, developed a great relationship with Israeli intelligence, Israeli security services. And oh, by the way, that relationship went back into the early 1950s. And there was an exchange of information between Israeli intelligence and the CIA all through that time period, and at a very detailed level. The Israeli intelligence knew exactly what the CIA knew, if you see the fact patterns in these papers. But no one's going to dig that. I mean, they're looking for the easy answers. So I'm just, and if this bores you, then whatever. But, and remember, it was Angleton and David Ben-Gurion who made the deal. Well, David Ben-Gurion was introduced to Alan Dulles by Angleton introduced David Ben-Gurion to Alan Dulles. Whew, sorry about that. And explain about how the intelligence services would share information. Okay, so this is pretty significant. So you can consider what the CIA knew in November of 1963, and even before that, was known by Israeli intelligence. And this was the birth of COINTELPRO, the birth of the U.S.-Israeli strategic relationship. You can like him or not, Angleton was really the birth father of that, and a very historic figure, and a sinister one, an infamous one. He did bad things. That's factual. And he plays a role in the assassination of JFK. But again, COINTELPRO. Think about this even today. The only thing you're going to get today about the JFK assassination in these hearings like Luna had are these poetic appearances by people like Oliver Stone and non-factual witnesses. All the factual witnesses are deceased or in really bad shape or I mean, I don't know of any direct witnesses in terms of the CIA part of things. But the secrecy around these papers is important. And also, when you look at, for example, the attacks on the Houthis right now by the U.S., despite the fact that we don't want to get into a war, okay, with because that really is going to ignite Iran. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to see Iran detonate a nuke in the Middle East sooner rather than later. But I'm just saying, we're playing with fire here. Apparently, well, not apparently, there's a group of Americans in power that do not want this Pax Americana. They're looking for war all of the time. It's a money thing, and it's also an ideological thing. But just to wrap this up, this also bleeds over from Kennedy's assassination into LBJ. Obviously, LBJ had a very important role in this whole thing. And then it rolled into Nixon and Watergate. You've got to know Watergate was really part of a CIA operation to take Nixon out. The first American coup of the 20th century was JFK. The second coup was Richard Nixon. All right. How did Nixon get tossed out of office? Threat of impeachment, high crimes, misdemeanors, which, frankly, what was that all about? His depth of knowledge of the JFK assassination. But what was Watergate all about? Well, consider that I think 4 of the 6 burglars were current or former CIA. Just saying. So I'm going to end it there because there's so much more to get into, but I don't want to drown you or bore you any more than I already have. But all of this is important. But one more thing. Columbo. One of the most telling things about Lyndon Johnson is that within 2 days after the assassination, he talked to Hoover. That's J. Edgar. And he said, look, you got to make it look like Oswald acted alone. He ordered his finding before the investigation even began. He ordered the finding. And his reasoning was, well, I don't want to go to war with the Soviet Union or Cuba or over Cuba or with Cuba. So that's how, in one respect, Oswald became the patsy. I'm just saying, that was one of many. The imprimatur of LBJ. Okay? All right. Now I want to show you something else. You start talking about this stuff, and you start talking about Butler. You start talking about Florida. You know, Ryan Ruth, right? You start talking about things that are extreme importance. And Alex, the people who watched Alex in the chat, you know about this. The FBI has a duty to warn. Do you remember me talking about certain things that happened to us during our investigation in Butler? Now, under IC Directive 191, which was signed into law in President Trump's first term, which was February of 2017, the duty to warn was outlined. If you don't mind, can you put up page 1 on the screen? This is the duty to warn. This is this is handled by the FBI's counterterrorism division, and this is a PDF. If you go scroll down, that's just a kind of a whatever. Okay, there's a PDF right there. So on 2/24/17, duty to warn was created, and this was effective for all of the FBI field offices. And here's basically what it says. This intelligence community directive, which is ICD 191, sets forth a consistent, coordinated approach for how the intelligence community will provide warning regarding threats to specific individuals or groups of intentional killing, serious bodily injury, and kidnapping. This includes threats where the target is an institution, a place of business, structure, or location. And as discussed below, the duty to warn procedures address, among other things, such matters as designated separate senior officers who shall be responsible for making the determination for determining whether to waive that duty, setting forth appropriate justifications for waiver, and coordinating with other IC elements of the U.S. government agency as appropriate. And you can read this. I'll put the link in the show notes again at HagmanPI.com. You click on the title. But here's the issue. There's a duty to warn. And I'll just leave it at that. There are a lot of people who have been warned.
Duty.
I said duty. You got to make jokes at times like this. When you receive, and Alex Jones, his guest, was a recipient of one of these letters. Okay. I know. There are many out there who have received duties, their letters, duty to warn. Many, many big broadcasters, alternative in the media. Many smaller ones, many people, many whistleblowers, especially since President Trump took over as president and Cash Patel and moved into the FBI. You want to know? Well, there are people on that list. People that you would think, why would they ever be on that list? Who did they piss off? Oh, you can hack off the CIA or a group within the CIA or the state, whatever you can, or even, it doesn't matter. But, when you get a letter like that, gets you to thinking. And the other thing is, it doesn't say duty to protect. You're on your own. You can read between the lines on all that. The last thing, and I'm going to warn you about the language on this. It's a few F-bombs here, okay? But, and I apologize for this, but I couldn't edit this. This is video 6 in the show notes. This is addressed to the task force, Anna Paulina Luna, the task force on assassinations, on all that stuff that Anna Paulina Luna's, behind. Again, remember, dragging Oliver Stone in and all of this crap without addressing really, in my view anyway, nor planning on, well, you know what? Let's let this woman have her say. It's 2 minutes long. There are a couple of naughty words here. I'm sure if there are any young people listening, they've heard a lot worse, and probably even from me. So, but let's go ahead and run video 6.
We got about halfway through the JFK hearing and I had to stop. I shut it down. I can't. I could not. I simply cannot. As soon as they started bringing in their political stances and their hate, they brought in Oliver Stone, who did a 5-minute monologue on transparency and JFK because he had, you know, he had done his movie way back when. He had some reporter who had wrote this op-ed on the JFK stuff, and he was there, but he's a big old liberal, and he had to get his little jabs at Trump. And their opening statements were like, transparency, and we can never let this happen again. And it is happening again. It fucking is happening again. What do we know about the Butler, Pennsylvania shooter that tried to take out Trump? What do we know about that cat? Did Congress go to Butler, Pennsylvania to try and figure it out like they did when they went to Dallas, Texas to try and figure out JFK? Did you go? Did you go on your little field trip? No, you're a useless organization. You're a useless organization.
Stop for a second. Yes, they did. Eli Crane went along with podcaster Benny Johnson, but that was a guided tour. They looked where they were told to look. They did not go where they were not allowed to look. To me, that's a guided tour. I don't do guided tours. If I'm investigating something, I will go where I think I need to go. I've said this before, but yet you had this big, essentially this, oh, hey, we are on top of this. We got this, man. We're going to tell you the truth. No, there's eight shell casings right there. This is where the body was. This is the blood trail down. Meanwhile, over there, you have the FBI doing all sorts of things. And dare I say it, inside the building. Okay. All right. So, yeah, you can watch the whole thing. I just stopped it right there. Now, as we stand here today, as I said, there's a threat against President Trump, against every member of his family, against people very close to him, against people working on his behalf, both privately and publicly. And there are assassin teams, and people who, members of cartels, including the Sinaloa cartel, and also assassins, yes, connected to Iran. But look, that's not what you think. It's, I'm not putting like a lot of emphasis there in terms of the Iranian assassins, although they did pick up an Iranian assassin in New York, but okay. But what we're facing right now is an organized effort by the liberal fascists and communists in this country, embedded in every entity within our federal government, whether it's an elected position by in Congress or elsewise. They're present and they're organizing and they're ramping up, and we're headed right now to any number of things taking place. The false flag of maybe, and Jones said this, Alex said this, of maybe something happening to a group of illegals where their plane goes down or you know, a bomb goes off. Massacre of illegals. Or, as Alex Jones says, a black church is a false flag. Something happens there. I was looking, and I found this. This is website one in the show notes. And I'd like you to take a look at this. And folks, if you have the time, spend the time on this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because I've already spent a whole bunch of time on this. But take a look at this. To me, this is very concerning. Natalie Winters talks about this. But it's a site called mobilize.us. Again, this is website one. Now, it looks pretty innocuous, doesn't it? Oh, closest events this week. Daria Devlin for mayor. door knock for Daria, and so on. And then events in your state as you scroll down and you keep going through. But the once you get down to different layers, and again, you've got to really kind of, you really kind of have to study this. And again, look for the fact pattern that emerges from this document by itself, from this website by itself. Look, phone banking and knocking on door knocking and stuff, that's all, that's pretty. That's fine. But it's worse than that. When you get into the groups, here's what you're going to find. You're going to find BLM. You're going to find Antifa. You're going to find unnamed groups. You're going to find, who else? Let me see who I found here. Hamas. Members of the Sinaloa cartel. And members of the cartels, benefactors of the cartels. Take a look at this. Spend some time. And it's going to look at the groups. And also look at the supporters of this website. Here's why this is important. Because the left, the communists and fascists already here are organizing. If you think they're home playing, you know, with themselves or coloring, you know, no. There is a very dangerous, I'm not saying this website is dangerous. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is there's a very dangerous movements going on, organizations, organizing going on. And they use websites like this. And Natalie Winters, I think, mentions this website. They're planning on violence. These groups are planning on violence. I told you about the fact that President Trump is not safe. Members of his family are not safe. Others are not safe. Alex Jones is not safe. Joe Rogan is not safe. I can guarantee it right there. Absolutely, positively guarantee you. Just from what I've seen with respect to Alex. Duty to warn, right? Not duty to protect, duty to warn. Remember the red, yellow, green list that Steve always used to talk about? Yeah. They are collecting. These organizations are making the lists. I'm telling you right now. They're identifying the names of the primary targets, members of their family, and assigning them a level, whether it's a color or a number, that goes to the importance. Think about the swatting stuff that's gone on. Was it pure malicious, childlike BS against the major influencers? Was that just BS? Was that just, oh, we're going to harass the living heck out of you? Or was that something perhaps a little bit different? Did you notice how they all kind of happened in a 10-day period? Did that seem a little bit more organized than usual? Has anyone really delved into that? They're planning. And there is overlap between the assassins, the groups, the cartels. And, you know, in the southern states, there are many people who are taking money from the cartels. Believe me, their hands are really dirty or bloody. Duty to warn, huh? Ask yourself this question as well. You know the threats against Elon Musk? What's he being threatened for? What does Tesla have to do with Elon Musk? Here's a better question. If the left is angry, or the communist, fascist, Muslim terrorists, if they're angry at Elon Musk for, oh, them losing their jobs or shutting down entities, saving American tax dollars, then why are Teslas and Tesla dealerships in the UK, in France, in Germany being, not Germany, in Europe being attacked and destroyed? Have you thought about that? Here's Natalie Winters, Real America's Voice. You've got to see this, even if you watch this once. It's only 3 minutes. The title of this is, this is extremely concerning, and it is. Folks, I hope this serves as a wake-up call to today's show. Because I tell you, from a personal level, it ain't fun. It ain't fun to... It's just not fun. None of this is fun. The targeting and stuff, not fun. The worrying about your family. Let's go to video one. Here it is.
And I think they like to play a similar game that they did with the origins of COVID, right? Whereby the Chinese Communist Party, their globalist counterparts, will delete the evidence, erase the evidence, or make it so we can't see said evidence that COVID-19 originated in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, or that the disease or the vaccines themselves were bioweapons. And then they say, oh, well, you're conspiracy theorists because you can't produce the documents or evidence to support your claims. And it's sort of a similar thing, right? That's what they do with dark money. That's what they do with the NGOs. That's what they do with the 990 501c3 forms. But with what we're able to discern, it's extremely, extremely concerning. And I want to really, I think, make this person, although I won't say person, I won't bend the knee and use the pronouns, this woman, I don't even know, but Erica Chenoweth. But this is someone who I think it's really important to understand sort of where she comes from. Her entire CV is really about analyzing not what is morally, ethically, or politically just, but what is justified by any means necessary to achieve not political change or, you know, paltry reforms, but full-scale regime change. Okay, this individual has written about toppling dictators. She has written, I'll read you the stuff she's written. Quote, the role of violence and nonviolent resistance, resilient republics, why terrorism does not destroy democracy, the study of terrorism, achievements and analytical challenges ahead, to bribe or to bomb, do corruption and terrorism go together, even lecturing on an event titled, Is Terrorism Ever Legitimate? And I think the most, I would say, telling piece of work that this individual has, which really fits in with this whole color revolution paradigm that we've been hammering here in the war room since even before this election, is a piece of work called Why Civil Resistance Works, The Strategic Logic of Nonviolent Conflict. Her team compared over 200 violent revolutions and 100 nonviolent campaigns, demonstrations, and came to the conclusion that at least through their metrics, nonviolent demonstrations were more effective. Now, the buried lead in that is that they're studying tactics that are violent. And this individual is studying tactics and how terrorism can be achieved to achieve political goals. And I think it's really just important to stress, and you can't be overstated enough, right? This whole resistance lab that's being propped up, this is not coming coming from the far, far left, you know, Democrat Socialist of America, niche left-wing activists. These are members of Congress. This is mainstream Democrat resistance, and we are on the precipice. I mean, you know me. I spend most of my days, yeah, sadly, watching this stuff. I have never seen these people be both so desperate, but also so violent and so willing to say the quiet part out loud. And like I said this morning, what they're doing to the Teslas at the end of the day is what they want to do to you. They just know that luckily we have a DOJ that's actually going to prosecute them. But make no mistake, they're coming for you next.
They're coming for you next. Make no mistake. Now, what she, the resistance lab, what she showed on the screen, when you dig deep into the website I showed you, mobilize.us, you're going to find, you'll ultimately wind up at the resistance lab if you dig deep enough. And if you follow the bouncing ball of facts, of the fact pattern that we've all been told to ignore and look for the smoking gun. You can, no, this is deeper than that. We are smarter than that. I'm going to go to Natalie one more time. One more time. And this is about the foreign aspect and the deep state. So you've got the domestic part, the liberal fascists. And fascism is, you know, it's a flexible definition for fascism. To be honest, one of the biggest fascists in the U.S. was a president, and his name was FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Through the CCC programs. And you know who was also somewhat of a fascist? I'm just going to throw this out there. And you can research this yourself. By its definition, JFK. In the 20th century, okay? But that's kind of an offshoot. And you might not agree with me on that. That's fine. But when you research fascism, you're going to find that to be true. But here is cut to, this is Natalie Winters again. This is a few seconds longer, but this is important too, because there are connections between the Communist Chinese Party, Harvard, and the deep state. As if you really had to know about Harvard, right? Obviously. But the enemy's within. These people are already within the gates. Hear this. Here it is, cut to.
Sure. Well, just to, I guess, wash, rinse, and repeat in honor of Stephen K. Bannon, this morning, sort of springboarding off of Rachel Maddow's show last night, Representative Pramila Jayapal going on there talking about this concept of a resistance lab, which is probably, I would say, the most aggressive tactic, not in protest, but in color revolution and full-blown regime change that the Democratic Party and their allies are engaging in. We drilled down this morning on how the Harvard Ash Center, which is helping to carry out this initiative, is not just itself funded by USAID and the State Department, but also the individual, a they-them pronoun user who runs it, while she herself is actually funded extensively by USAID, having lectured there repeatedly, in addition to receiving funds from the United States Institutes of Peace. In other words, I think the most important takeaway, you're not talking about run-of-the-mill protests, civil disobedience, or disagreements with President Trump over policy disputes. You're talking about people who study terrorism, violent protest, and conflict to come to the conclusion that right now they might prefer nonviolent action, but that's only because they think it's more advantageous to their cause. We ran out of time, but I want to get to the sort of other side of the coin, the I think equally important issue with this convinced Harvard Center, which is that it is also now, despite the fact that the web pages are deleted, so they won't tell you this now, but they're actually funded by several Chinese Communist Party run entities, including, but not limited to, the China Southern Power Grid Corporation, which is wholly run and operated by the Chinese Communist Party. Their entire board of directors is appointed by the CCP, in addition to New World China Enterprises Project, which similarly is one of these Chinese state-owned enterprises whose board is completely controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. But this ASH Center is particularly nefarious. We've actually reported, believe it or not, 3 or 4 years ago here in the war room on this exact institute, because they were caught publishing pro-Chinese Communist Party propaganda. They put out a report called Understanding CCP Resilience, Surveying Chinese Public Opinion Through Time, where they said that Xi Jinping was, quote, as strong as ever and under no imminent threat of popular upheaval. This report was hyped by the Chinese Communist Party, saying, look how popular we are. You know, we're doing better than the United States. And I think the most important takeaway from this, Dave, and you've obviously been around War Room probably longer than I have, but this idea, right, of elite merger as opposed to just elite compromise, but how American elites are quite envious, I think, of the powers that the Chinese Communist Party weaponizes over their people. Believe it or not, this very same ASH Center, which, like we said, is training not just Democrat activists, but members of Congress, well, they actually run, or used to run, it's now held over at Cambridge, but China's Leaders in Development Program for over a decade, which was, quote, widely recognized by the Chinese government as one of the best overseas training programs for government officials, continuing their description, taught both at Tsinghua University, China, and Harvard Kennedy School. This multi-week training program is specifically designed to help prepare senior local and central Chinese government officials to more effectively address the ongoing challenges of China's national reforms. Some of the people that they lectured include individuals from the Xinjiang Production and Construction Corps, which was actually sanctioned by the Trump administration for human rights abuses and their efforts to essentially repress the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. Despite that, the same ASH Center that, like I said, is now training Democrat protesters was busy lecturing and even bringing Chinese Communist Party officials into meetings with State Department officials, members of Congress, and the FDA.
Okay. She went into more detail about the other organization, or about the other, well, the other organizations, and of course, the and Harvard and such. And with that, okay, when you look at the what's really taking place, especially with the communist left, the fascists, the true fascists, not us, but the true fascists, because again, this the elasticity of the word fascism is now. It can be exchanged with the word heretic, or somebody who doesn't belong, or is not worthy, to be part of the body politic or in the general population. If they deem you unworthy, then you're a fascist. If your ideology is wrong, then you're a fascist. If you support President Trump and Elon Musk, you're a fascist. You hear it on guests from, well, you hear it on all the news channels, the late shows. Go back to the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. Go and think about the propaganda, and even COINTELPRO to an extent, okay? But the propaganda against Americans that Obama brought in. It was Obama who modernized all of this. But we can go back to 46 when George Orwell, he noted, this is fascinating, the communist left in this country, especially those members of Congress, I'm talking about on the national level and on a state, and even some of the, you know, lesser elected individuals, I mean, people elected to a lesser office at a county level, we'll say. they use other words like racist and sexist and homophobe, and I mean, for similar purposes. But those aren't working anymore. They don't have that elasticity that the word fascist has. It's an ever-changing, evolving meaning. And that's on purpose. So hang on one second. The word fascism, and this is according to George Orwell, what he wrote in a book called, or an essay called, Politics and the English Language. The word fascism has now no meaning except insofar as it signifies something not desirable. That was George Orwell back in 1946, but that was based on a lot of history, pre-war history. And more recently, Representative Rangel, back in 1994, he called, remember the contract with America? Remember the 1994 contract with America? He called that more extreme than Nazism. In 2000, Bill Clinton called the Texas GOP platform a fascist tract. Okay, that was on a federal, or that was on a state level. Then in the early 2000s, the New York Times reporter Chris Hedges wrote a book called American Fascists, The Christian Right in the War on America. Conservative, basically asserting that conservative or fundamentalist Christians are fascist. What are we seeing today? We're seeing the attacks against Christianity. All of this is combined. You're having this cauldron of hatred. And you have exposure that is really solidifying this fact pattern of institutional corruption and conspiracy, whether it be the Kennedy assassination or the non-telling information about the Butler assassination, or the Butler attempted assassination, or the Florida attempted assassination more recently. And there have been others. But then you look at the larger scale too, the global aspect of things, and you can see, again, a fact pattern emerges, which is why, too, you've got Jay Paul out there and others posing as the resistance. But what are they resisting? They're resisting fascism. Well, wait a second. Who are the fascists? Oh, it's us, because that word means the heretics among us, the people who don't believe the same as we do. I mentioned Roosevelt and I mentioned JFK. Consider, again, Roosevelt's Civilian Conservation Corps. That was a militaristic social program. And borrowing from that, JFK created the Peace Corps. Now, I want to toss one more thing that seems almost not attached, but it is. When we're fighting something bad, what has entered the Americans' lexicon over the past, 40 years? The phrases war on drugs, war on cancer, war on poverty. Back in LBJ and other exhortations to make this or that the moral equivalent of war. And this goes from healthcare to gun control and so on. The ideological differences. We need to go beyond the politics and put ideological differences behind us in order to do the people's business. That's what you're hearing now. That's what you heard. I'm sorry, during the Biden regime. Now it's full on, we're coming for you. I'm not going to get into racism or Nazism, but I'll just say this. The Nation of Islam is really structured after Nazism. It has surprising ties to Nazism. The theology of Islam and the Nation of Islam in particular is almost Himmler-esque. The Black Panthers, too. This cadre, this militaristic cadre of men dedicated to violence and racial superiority. Now, I'm not talking about white supremacy either. They're as fascist as Hitler's brown shirts. But you're not going to hear that on the news. Just understand this, fascism, when properly understood, is not a phenomenon of the right at all, the right biased leaning, the right meaning the political right. Instead, it is and always has been this phenomenon, an ideology of the left, hence my term liberal, or the term I've been using, liberal fascism. And one other thing, people think that communism and fascism are on opposite ends of the spectrum. In reality, they're very closely related. And you can see this in history. You can see this really through today. But that's where I'm going to leave that. Now, one more thing, again, to really explain the dangers and to kind of put a cherry on top of the dangers. Well, two more to really drive this home. Mike Benz describes the danger when you start poking the bear. Now, he's much more eloquent than that. But when you start poking the bear, and start hitting the deep state actions and plans and the entities used to conduct those plans and actions and all that stuff, you start poking that bear. That bear's going to slap at you. Here's Mike Benz in Cut 5 that explains it a little more eloquently than I just did, but here it is.
They have no idea how deep the rabbit hole goes there or how dark many of the operations they thought USAID was involved in. And I think that this is part of what the blockade being set up right now to stop Doge from finding out is about. They don't want them to have USAID's books. They don't want them to have the internal records. They don't want them to have the emails and communications. They don't want them to they definitely don't want them to have the transfer of money flows. This was the sort of thing that even the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which directly oversees USAID, could not get access to until the present moment. Senator Joni Ernst had an ex-base with Elon Musk where she said when she tried to do oversight, she was threatened by USAID. When USAID ran the Zunzuneo op in Cuba in 2014 and the scandal popped off who approved this, and it turned out it was all in-house at USAID, what Senate staffers said was when they tried to get oversight of this operation along the way, they were told that if Senate staffers found out what USAID was doing, people could die.
People could die. And here we have President Trump, or Elon Musk at the direction of President Trump, shattering USAID. I'm telling you right now, there are plans in the works. There are the other contingency here is that the southern border, why was the southern border left open? 4 years, the southern border was open. Mayorkas was the point person, although Kamala Harris, the border czar to handle things, but by orders of the Biden regime. Why was it left open? Oh, it was for the votes. No, I mean, yes, but that's not it. The amount of poison that flowed across that border, the number of weapons that flowed across that border, and equally important, the number of really bad criminals that have no problem murdering, raping, cutting the heads off. No problem at all. They let them in. They flew them in at times. For votes, to change the demographics, that was part of it. But that really was not the intent. In my estimation, based on my research, the intent was a much bigger picture. Again, think of mobilize.us, and then you dig and you come up with that, you know, the other website that was shown, the organization to act. You don't think all of these, with some exceptions, you know, the videos you see, some morons keying a Tesla. Okay, that's just brainwashed morons. Okay. Useful idiots. But the larger attacks, those in the U.S. against the dealerships, that where they really cause harm. I mean, some economic harm. I mean, the whole, everything does. But the organized attacks, and to even show you how organized overseas, where they really have no horse dog in this race. I mean, directly. Then you know you're hitting some big nerves. I mean, think about Kennedy being hacked off after the Bay of Pigs and all the CIA interference and finding out half the state, half the Department of State was a CIA officer, were CIA officers. The infiltration by Dulles. We have the same thing. We had the same thing. We've had it since Obama. In spades, man. In spades. If you think Obama is not an instrument in this, man, Obama is, you know, I used to say he was a kind of a mid-level manager tool kind of thing. But I would put him right up there with Soros, given his abilities now and his ability to contact, make contacts and develop contacts. You've got people running things, Obama in particular. And then you've got his people, Brennan. And then, of course, you have the money people, Soros and Gates. And then you've got John Podesta. You've got Victoria Nuland. You've got John Kerry, Susan Rice, Jamie Raskin as well, and other members of the leftist Congress. This goes beyond the Democratic Socialists of America. This goes beyond this goes to treason and sedition against the American public. And if you don't think that all of this, really back from the COINTELPRO of I mentioned under Kennedy to today, if you don't think that this is really going to amount to much, the numbers of short videos, again, now there's language here. This one is a little bit languagey, dicey, okay? You can close your ears if you don't want to hear, but the title is When It Happens. There are an increasing number of these videos going up based on, in some cases, not this case, but in some cases, based on the plans and plots and schemes of the organizers aforementioned organizers, perhaps? Against President Trump and against the American people specifically. Because remember what was said. Look, they're not, after they get done torching Teslas, they're coming for you. They're coming for you. They're coming for me. They're coming for your family. Duty to warn. Duty to warn. This is cut 8, when it happens. It's a minute, about a minute and a half. Bear with it, but understand this is the result. This is the consequence of the organizations that I've been talking about, and individuals too. Here it is.
Hey guys, so what are we going to do when it finally happens? And y'all know what I'm talking about. I told my wife that if we are ever sitting there, or anywhere for that matter, and we get a breaking news flash across our phones that it has finally happened, I don't give a fuck where we are at, what we are doing. I could be in the middle of like the biggest banking meeting with investors of my life. If I see that shit come across on my phone, I am excusing myself out of whatever the hell I'm doing, and I'm going to the nearest bar. I am getting shit-faced canned like it is 2005 again, and I've got my Miss Me jeans on and my bedazzled belt and all that good shit. Everybody in the bar is getting shots on me. I have this giant box of fireworks that I bought for election night when we all thought Kamala was gonna win. I will light those bitches off of a rooftop in the middle of downtown Oklahoma City. I will hoot and holler. Hell, I might even call a mariachi band. Anybody got a mariachi band on call? Because let me tell you, the day that that happens, it is gonna be like the 4th of fucking July. And you know what? I don't even care if that means J.D. Vance becomes president. Failed drag queen J.D. Vance becomes president. Because he will faceplant so fucking hard. He is the most unlikable, unfuckable dude on the face of the planet. He has no charisma. So the cult will eventually start dying off because nobody's getting on board with J.D. Vance. So I'm not even mad at that. Let him come and faceplant, and in a few years we can wrap this shit up the way that it should have been, vote all these motherfuckers out of here, and go dance on somebody's grave.
That's pretty harsh, wouldn't you say? But that's not even, that is light compared to the threats that are out there. And the threats that are out there, again, understand you have the Democratic Socialists of America, their caucus in Congress. That's growing. You have these radical organizations in Congress, as well as in different parts of our own government. Then you have the executive or Biden regime opening the southern border, bringing these people in. And this is obviously, that was a lot worse. Clinton brought in a lot of MS-13 members, but Biden regime and whoever was, you know, doing that, in addition to Joe Biden, and I do suspect some of the people I mentioned by name, including and especially Obama, had done this for a different purpose. So, done this for the purpose of violence. So, when, and I got this question, and I know Alex Jones and his guest talked about this. What would be the flashpoint? What would set off the entirety of our nation? Well, they mentioned about, I think, two or three things. The first thing, and again, think back, again, the threat against President Trump is still out there. If anything happens to President Trump, I'm going to tell you right now, there will be stuff that will happen. There will be guns in the streets. We were, half a centimeter away in July. But this will be by orders of magnitude worse. This will be absolutely, I mean, blood will flow in the streets because of people like that. Now, I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying this is 100% what's going to happen if anything happens to President Trump or a member of his family. And they're going after his family, too. And that, of course, that would give the so-called justification for a crackdown on the Second Amendment. But that wouldn't even, to me, that wouldn't even be a thing. The other thing, too, if they mess with your money, any way, shape, or form, the deep state globalists or, you know, some element therein messes with your money. So you've got two flashpoints, I believe. Now, again, I am borrowing this a little bit from Alex Jones and his guest, but this has been, you know, I've looked at this and I've watched these videos. I went into these websites and their number one goal is to get rid of President Trump. Not because they hate him, but they hate him for what he is doing. And he's doing the work of a man who adheres to the Constitution. They hate him because he's costing them money. He's making them go back to work. He's closing the border. He's causing a humanitarian crisis. So you've got the organizers at one level who understand that the organizers can use the useful idiots like this moron that you saw and the people who key Teslas, the useful idiots, the morons out there who couldn't explain, well, you know, you couldn't explain why they're doing what they're doing except Elon bad, Orange Man bad. But again, is that organic? No. Why do you think they kept the CIA or the JFK files hidden? Because the people who delve into those will identify a fact pattern. And by doing so, it will implicate the intelligence agencies in the U.S. and Israel and other places. Think about how long Brennan was there. That Muslim convert communist. All of this is leading up to that point. I guess we have a duty to warn, don't we? Last one. I want to play cut 7. This is the last. I was going to talk about the Ukraine article in the newspaper, New York Times, a 10,000 word vomit. Well, I shouldn't say vomit. 10,000 words that you know because you watch this program, you watch Jones, you watch other Tucker Carlson, that the U.S. has soldiers, had soldiers on the ground in Ukraine. Putin knew it. Biden knew it. Biden put them there. The Biden regime, that is, the people behind the Biden regime. That American soldiers have been killed. That nearly, the death count is nearly 2 million from both sides, including civilians, in 3 years. During that 3 years, we have been directly at war with Russia. And now Ukraine is balking at any kind of agreement. Why is that? Because he's not his own man. And they want war. And they want nuclear war. The same people who are behind Ukraine are pushing the Gaza, are pushing the attack against Iran. The same people who are pushing for war are also pushing for social unrest here. But you already know that. This is the last video. This was done in 2000, so 25 years ago. I'm going to open this door, and this is Freemasonry. some predictions from the year 2000. This is cut 7. It's just over 2 minutes long. Here it is.
Your family, your child, your mother, there isn't anything that you have or ever hope to have that they're not planning on taking away. I'm talking about the oligarchy of evil that controls this country. The American dream is over. The American nightmare is here. The big picture, they want it all. They want to enslave your child, your wife, your mother. There isn't anything that you ever had. There isn't anything that you own. There isn't any right that you possess that they're not planning on taking away.
Sheeple.
Your sheeple. And your children are going to be slaughtered if you go along with the program. It's time to wake the town and tell the sheeple. We are being led like sheep to the slaughter. What is the purpose? A new world order. The United States of America is controlled by this evilarchy. They control the money system. They control the State Department. They control the presidency. On the backside of the dollar bill, you'll find the Illuminati pyramid. Anowet Septus. Novus Ordo Seclorum.
If you look very closely, you will see an owl.
So they have a plan to give us a new age world global occultic religion.
They're going to have been deceived so greatly that they'll actually think it's something good. In fact, the whole New Age movement, the New World Order crowd, is telling people that the 666 Mark of the Beast is the most elite thing that could ever happen to them.
No cash. Cashless society. It's ready to go. Disease could be created. In essence, this is what he was saying.
We have new strains of virtually everything that's drug-resistant or drug-proof.
Well, I'm not worried about the old diseases. I'm worried about the ones that they create to bring down the population of the world. They simply want to exterminate them, but that they consider them to be useless eaters.
Words are very important to the Illuminati. These things are manufactured purposely for a purpose. And so I'm saying that there is something organized and directed, and it's here in this country.
Future shocker, biochip. And this is what Anthony showed you earlier, a biochip. That's an injectable computer chip, an economic mark in the back of our right hands or in our foreheads.
You've got a choice. You can join in this fight, or you can die as a slave.
You know that newspaper they held up? Did you catch a date on that? You were able to see the month and the day. So what I did was I searched for every year. It was April 2nd. Like the year seemed to be blurred out or was blurry. So I wanted to find out what year. There it is right there. I want to find out what year that was. There was only one. It also says Sunday, I think, on there, right? I can't see it. Yeah, Sunday, April 2nd, and then the year's all... Ugh. There was only one year. Really, I think in the last half of the 20th century, where April 2nd fell on a Sunday, and that was 1977. So that paper is from, that newspaper is from 1977, being discussed in the year 2000. 25 years ago now. What do you think? Folks, I want to thank you for sticking with me. Look, I don't know. Did that make sense in the chat? Did you like this? If not, you just tell me to, you know, pound sand. But basically what I'm trying to tell you is we are facing right now a critical convergence of events. You know, people downplay the importance of the JFK file release. No, don't downplay it. But if you do, you're looking for the wrong information. You're looking for strategies, tactics, and modus operandi of the CIA and entities within the federal government, Department of State. The deep state, essentially, that can tell you a lot because they sponsored the color revolutions ever since it began. It's happening today in our own country by the enemies within. Folks, God bless you. Thank you for tuning in. I just want to My heart goes out to everyone. And,